Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening.
Episode 30. What if your boat was raided by pirates?
I was born in Vietnam. Came over here when I was around 7. The war was, you know, the war. Everybody knows about the war. But I don't know much about it because I was born after the war. I know that during the time when the troops left and of course, communists took over, my dad was captured. He was a prisoner of war. He was on the south side, the South Vietnamese. So then when the war ended, of course, the fall of Saigon, he was captured and he was in a concentration camp. We can visit him. My mom always take me there, and he would be, you know, just coming out of the fields. They try to kind of rehabilitate you, kind of change your mindset. That's pretty much it. That's what the communist does. The stories that he tells me, what he had to do to survive, what he had to eat. The closest movie that you can compare to it is The Killing Fields. So after, like, I believe 5 years, you're kind of rehabilitated. I don't know how they work, you know, so they let you go. One day, I remember Christmas Day, he just popped up home. He came home. As soon as he came out of prison, the camp, he just wanted to just to leave the country because he seen it all, you know, the Vietnam War. He lost his brother, and so he just wanted to start a better life for us. The next thing I remember was walking through the woods. So this is where we start to try to escape. I remember just hiding and running through the woods. How did we get to that point? I don't know. And then it was put in my head that, all right, we had to go to America. That's all I remember. And then I woke up the next day or something. I remember waking up and we were under a tarp, a blue tarp. And we're in a boat. Grandma and Grandpa gave them some gold bars to trade for our seats on a boat. So it was three of us. It was myself, the second sister, and then my oldest sister, and then my dad. Mom, she stayed behind. I don't know for her reasons, maybe because she was with my brother. You know, he wasn't born yet. So all I know is that the four of us just took off. I think I was 6 years old. My older sister was 9, and then my oldest was 12. This was a little dinghy boat. 51 of us on this boat. Next thing you know, I woke up and I was throwing up because we're out in the ocean. All of a sudden, yeah, you know, these lights just shine. You know, I thought, oh, we made it. We made it to America. But people start jumping over, fighting, screaming. I can recall that. My dad was shoving my sister and myself behind him underneath this cabinet. I don't know what was going on. Now, the pirates that we think is not the skull and eye patch crap stuff that you see on TV. This is the ones with the AKs, the ones with the, you know, the real deal stuff. My dad was just shoving me in, and then and I guess they're taking people. They're taking people. I didn't know what was going on. I seen people gotten hurt. I saw this lady just kind of begging. They were like trying to pull something out of her teeth. You know, I believe it's probably gold teeth. Just a frantic, you know, that time. I was like, you know, glimpse of it just went on crazy. My dad was standing next to me, holding me back, and my other sister, holding her bag, and across from us was the other boat, and the guy, I don't remember his face anymore, but he had my sister in his arm, and he had a gun, and the boat was going away, and we were left there. My sister was on the boat, other boat. That was my older sister, when she was 12. That's the last time we saw her. And I believe they were Thailand pirates. We had no engine, we had no water, no food. We were just left there. They raped a lot of people, I believe. You know, things like that, you just kind of lost memories of, but then I remember my sister and that guy. I'm trying to reframe my anger here. Sorry, I just don't wanna. After that, we were left stranded. My dad, I can imagine now, he's a broken man, of course, you know. And then he told me later on, he tried to go over there and trying to help, trying to get my sister back, but they beat him up, and then he fell unconscious. I don't know what was, he just couldn't do it. I can imagine now, as a father, I can imagine, you know, you're sacrificing one for a life of two. I can imagine what he feels like, you know, your daughter just taken out of your hand, that's it, and you can't do anything about it. You know, they left us to die. And all I can remember was the waves. You know, when you're young, waves are like giants. All you see is the moon, and you're floating there. I remember one night it was raining. I don't know how long we had drifted. The whatever tarp that we had, and we're trying to drink off the rain, you know, the rainwater. I remember that. I remember the taste of that plastic rubber. I can still remember that. There's water everywhere, but of course you can't drink it. So I remember hanging on to one of my dad's leg, and my other sister was hanging on to his other leg. And I remember looking around, and people were just like, you know what? All right, I'm giving up hope. Somebody passed me a little cup or something like that. My dad said, drink it. And so I tried to drink it, but I threw it up. It was we had to drink urine. We had to drink somebody's piss. I couldn't do it. None of us could do it. My dad couldn't do it. He spat in my mouth. He spat in my mouth. He was like, "Hell, here's some water. Here's some." So he was spitting in my mouth and my sister's mouth. I remember that one. And we were like, you know, we were like, I guess, ready to die. Night falls, and then next thing you know, we woke up to another ship. And it was one of those big, you know, oil rig, tanker, I don't know. And we're all jumping, waving. They're all like, ah, you know, screaming. And the tanker picked us up. I don't remember who they were, but I know that they took us up onto their ship. And then I turned around, and the last person who came onto that big ship, I turned around and looked at our boat, and it just sank. And that was it. It just sank. They dropped us off in Thailand. They dropped us in Thailand, and I don't know what the paperwork, you know, I don't know those details. My dad was telling me, stay by the camp. Can't go out at nighttime because pirates would come up to the shore and kidnap girls and or boys, I don't know, middle of the night. I don't know how long we lived in the island, but then that's how we became U.S. citizen, because we were refugees, my uncle who lived over here, he kind of sponsored us. I remember coming to America. I remember the first thing that I was given. It was so precious. I was so proud that I was given an apple, a red apple. I never seen a red apple before. I remember that. It's crazy. You know, we take things for granted. I eat apples every day. But this point, this time right now, because I'm telling this story, like, damn, I forgot. I totally forgot what it felt like to have an apple in my hand. And I was like, damn. And some flight attendant, she gave me an apple. And I was so proud. I was like, Dad, I got an apple. Look at this thing. Came over and, we landed in California. One of my dad's uncle, we live with them for a little bit. You know, you don't have anything, but they have all the things, and you're just living there. Even though you're family, it doesn't mean crap. I'll tell you that now. Your dad has to go and bust tables for your uncle, you know. But hey, that's how we started. I believe he's working day and night, busting tables for my uncle. When you don't have anything, you're jealous of your cousins who have such things. And then, of course, you know, I don't blame anybody anymore because, you know, we were just young, stupid kids. When they have something, they're like, no, this is my stuff. This is my house. This is, you know, this is me. You know, you don't have nothing. And then my dad was sick of it. And he was like, you know what, we're moving out. And we moved to Rodale, California, in the projects, government homes. And back then, it was nothing back then. My backyard was the refinery, the Chevron refinery. Yeah, I was around my buddies, and we grew up in that time. We're rough kids, you know. That's what it is. There's great times. I was taught how to ride on my first bicycle with my buddies, you know. But I was also taught how to steal. I remember seeing a grown man shot and bleeding for the first time, you know, maybe when I was 10 or 11. And I see people selling drugs all the time, you know, as they're making money. It didn't occur to me yet, but I remember, I believe by the seventh grade, I was taught how to shoot guns and stuff like that. That's the way it is. Seventh grade, eighth grade, you got guns. You're getting older, teenager. You're trying to defend your territory, kind of say, you know, fighting with other rivalries. And then now it gets a little crazy because you're older, and of course, thug life. That's when all that stuff was coming out, and you emanate that, and you're thinking you're hard, you're bad, you want to be that. And yeah, I was walking around trying to be like that, just like my boys, walking around with a 9mm. And I was taught how to sell drugs. I was taught how to break things, how to weigh things. I smoke a puff here and there in my life. I never did any hardcore cocaine, crack stuff. That's the stuff I sold because what I seen it do to people. So it makes me like, oh, this is sickening, this is stupid. But it gave me the power because I control the situation. Dad, you know, I didn't know what was he doing back then, but he was going to work. He was going to school, and he actually got a college degree from Contra Costa College, and later on in life he worked for a Siemens company, and technician or something. By this time, I think my mom came over already with my brother, and it's like, damn, you know, we're here, we're all family again. But of course, I was a teenage little runt, little rugrat, trying to be hard, trying to survive, trying to prove my existence amongst my buddies, you know. Either I run with the nerds and be home and go to school. You know, I go to school. I do good in school. I got a really, really good grade point average when I was high school. 3.71, I can put that in there, even though the bad stuff I've done. But it is not the way I am. I have a good heart. I know I do. It's just money, easy money. That's what it is. It's just easy money. It's excitement. It's just my buddies, you know. And, you know, I made 20, 30 bucks in about 5 minutes, and it's like, wow. Now I look back at myself. It's like, damn, what a stupid little kid. And I see other kids out there. I'm like, damn, I want to go slap the crap out of them. But you know, you don't know what they have nowadays. It's just like me, you know. They'll turn around and shoot me or something. So it's like, yeah, they're going to have to live life and learn life the way I did. At one point, my mom, it's gotten so bad at the place where we lived in the project that we were robbed twice. The first time we came home and it was all gone. Damn, I know who it is too. And then, but then back then I was too young to do anything about it. My dad, of course, I understand now, you know, he has a family he has to protect. So he can't do anything about it either, you know. The second time we were robbed was when I was older already. This time, my mom was robbed at gunpoint, coming out of the car right in front of the house, our project house. And they took the car, they took everything, they took off. The next morning, my friend says, "You know who did it, right?" And then I was like, "Who?" And then they knew exactly who did it. And then here we go. So, of course, pressuring you to, you know, you do something like that, you know you gotta get killed, you know you're gonna have to die. That's the way it's gonna be, you know, that's the way it is. So I know exactly who it is because they told me, everybody tells me. And of course, when you're walking down the street and you see the other punk that did it to your mom, you're right there, and then it's like all your buddies, everybody over here, the whole project's telling you, "What's up, man? What's up, man? You're gonna do something, man." So it's pushing you to retaliate. And he knows that I'm gonna retaliate. He knows exactly what I'm gonna do. My parents, on the other hand, knew exactly what was going on. They knew exactly who did it. I mean, you know, they knew exactly what I got into. And they were like, "We have to leave. Don't do it." They're begging me, don't retaliate, don't do anything. So within a week, can you believe this? Within 1 week, we, after maybe 10, 20 years of living in that thing, in the projects, that was the key. Once he moved me out, I started to spiral downhill, and then I just prayed that, hey, you know what? I want out of this stuff. You know, I want out. I want to just, you know, live. You know, I want a girl and all that stuff. You know, I have life. You know, I want that life. That's what my life I would like. A lot of the stuff I've done in my life, I think I paid for it when I almost died crashing on my motorcycle. And I believe that was like the way of paying back. You know what? I here, take it. I'm done with it. So I start all over with that. Going, you know, doing 100 miles, doing wheelies. And one day had no helmet on, ran to a car and airlifted to John Muir in Walnut Creek and almost died and came out of it, and that's it. I believe that was my way of paying back for the things I've done in life. I was working in construction for, you know, 5-something years, and then in the union, and it was making good money. I didn't like that work though. It was just something I didn't like to do. My girlfriend back then, her family has a salon and stuff like that. I got into the trade. I liked it. It was fun. I'm messing with ladies' hair and stuff like that. I love it, you know? After 5 years of working under my in-law's salon, my brother and I, he said, "Why don't you just open up the salon?" We changed this whole salon around and made it absolute. The salon has been here for 13 years. I love it. This is what I like to do. And I don't drive a BMW. I wish I did. You know, I wish I seen those out there. But and you know, I'm just an average Joe hustling and trying to survive. But you know, it's all about the creativity of hair, and this is what I love to do. You know, this is art. This is, you know, I love it. My daughter, she's 2 years old. She's 2 years old, and you know, she's that's a miracle. My wife, she had, you know, she went through. They said that we wouldn't have kids. 10-some years, we always prayed. And then at the very end, 2 years ago, that's the miracle. Destiny is her name. My destiny is my daughter's name. My is a Vietnamese word for cherry blossom. That's her first name. And destiny is her middle name. If you put it together, my destiny. 30-something years, this is the first time I got to tell the story to a wider audience, because it's always been kept in the family. I want to expose it. I want to let people know, and hopefully one day, you know, we can unite with my sister, and that's my dream. Until then, I still every day I wake up in my life, I look in the mirror and I remember, I can remember because it, I have a tattoo of my sister's name and the date of the days that it happened, you know, what I went through. So something like that, I can never forget because I see it every day. So it reminds me of how I got here.